Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts. Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where? Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Just like, if I'm going to pay this kind of rent, like move into a new place, pay that rent, I might as well like be buying something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you. It's a big step, though. Oh, my goodness.
I know.
Oh, my goodness. Here we go. Hey, everybody. I'm Kai Brisdahl. It's a real estate advice show today. No, I'm just kidding. It's not really. It's Make Me Smart. It is making today make sense, though, on a Wednesday. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, and I'm Mariel Segarra. It is actually What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, and that means it is time for us to answer listener questions. Our first one today is a question about inflation.
My name's Jody from Napa, California, and what I want to know is if inflation is the process of too much money chasing too few goods, why is asking the public to consume less until we can get this whole scenario fixed never discussed?
Well, look, because Jody, it's a little bit of be careful what you wish for. And so here's what we did. Marissa Cabrera, a producer extraordinaire, got on the phone with economist John Lear at Morning Consult. And here's what he had to say.
To some extent, you know, imposing a ban on spending or trying to bring down the total level of spending is also going to have negative follow-up effects in terms of decreasing job growth and wages.
So remember what happened. So two things to know. Number one is, and we say this on Marketplace all the time, spending by consumers or on behalf of consumers accounts for 70% of all economic activity in this country, right? So if you cut consumer spending, that is empirically not a good thing. And you need to look no farther than example number two, which is the beginning of this pandemic when we all stopped spending and the economy went down the drain. And if you remember, there was job losses, there was GDP shrinkage, there was all kinds of stuff. So doing that is not necessarily the way to get out of it. The way to get out of it, honestly, is just wait. We just got to wait till it all works its way through. It's like that big bulge in the python, and it's eventually going to get worked through. But we're in the middle of it now, I'm telling you.
Yeah. And I mean, if you think about this from the retailer perspective, they make their decisions about what to buy going forward based on demand, what they think demand is going to be, what it is right now, and kind of a historical perspective. So yeah, if they see demand is dropping, they're going to buy even less, you know, might be even harder to get what you want going forward.
Yeah, it gets messy in a big hurry. Okay, so more on consumer spending. This one about holiday shopping. Here you go.
Hi, this is JT from Cedar Hill, Texas, the location of the highest concentration of radio towers in the United States. Everyone
what?
I know has been concerned about supply chain issues, so they bought their Christmas presents way early, including myself. Is that what's fueling the increase in consumer spending that everyone's so excited about right now? And is that going to go away? Are we not going to get the expected holiday spending that companies are used to? Thanks for making me smart.
I feel like, JT, if we're going to answer this question, you have to make us smart about why Cedar Hill, Texas has the highest concentration of radio towers in the U.S. Like, that is very specific.
Well, I don't... just some very quick Googling here. Cedar Hill is in sort of northeast, sort of north central Texas, which might be flat. I don't know. Elevation is 880 feet. So maybe it's got some good... I don't know. Fascinating.
Very interesting.
Yeah, totally.
Well, we can answer your question, JT, which is holiday spending is actually on pace to set a record this year. And I think it was, the National Retail Federation said it's expected to be up by as much as 11.5% spending is in November and December of this year compared to last year. And I could think of a few reasons for that. One is actually inflation, right? Because those are raw numbers. So if it costs more...
It's a dollar amount report. Yeah.
Yeah. So if it costs more to get that whatever present that you're getting for your significant other and for your parents, and your total dollar spend is going to be up even if you buy the same number of things. And then also, there's people are shopping early, as he pointed out. But one thing I was thinking about is, if you shop early, it actually gives you more opportunities to spend, because like I'm picking up Christmas presents for my family all year, but I forgot I had them.
Are you?
So
really?
Yeah.
My mom used to do that.
If I see something I think they'll like I bought my mom some stuff this summer and my brother, and like I bought some stuff, I don't know, a couple weeks ago and I forgot I even had it. So then I just bought some more stuff. And it just leads to kind of a rolling holiday shopping season and more impulse buys.
And then 2 years later, my mother would pull something out of the closet and go, oh, yeah, this was for Christmas 2 years
ago.
And
I'm like,
Mom, what are you doing? What are you doing? Yeah.
Yeah, I have a hard time not giving someone. If I buy you a present in like July, it's hard to hold on to it until December, because it's like you get excited about giving the person the thing. Like it made you think of them, you know?
Yeah. Totally.
So sometimes I gift early. Okay, well, our next question is about manufacturing.
Hey guys, this is Joe in the military stationed in Korea. And I had a question on your recent episode on onshoring. And my question is, what constitutes domestically made with regard to the trade imbalance? For example, if I'm Ford and I send all the parts manufacturing overseas and then I assemble the car in the United States, is that domestically manufactured?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. So the Census Bureau tracks foreign trade, first of all. So we have gone to them for the source. This is Mark and Marissa and Grace, who have, done the homework on this one. Here's the deal. The Census Bureau defines domestic goods as, and this is a quote, commodities that are grown, produced, or manufactured in the United States. The definition also includes items that were, quote, previously imported and are further manufactured or processed in the United States or have been enhanced in value or changed from their original form. So that's the overall thing. But with cars, it's really, really hard because the USMCA, right, which is the successor to NAFTA that President Trump negotiated, established new guidelines, many of which include automobiles, because automobile parts or sections, I suppose, go back and forth across those borders. I can't even tell you how many times. So cars, under the USMCA, have to meet a 70 to 75% quote North American content requirement, that is to say percentage of the car's materials manufactured in the United States of America. So it could be manufactured and assembled in Mexico, sold in the States, and counted as a domestic good. So it's really, really, really hard. Really hard. Really hard.
Yeah, there's not one like straight answer to that.
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And apparently those labels, those Made in America labels, there's a clear definition for them, but it's not really enforced. So just because you see a product advertised as made in the USA doesn't mean it actually was. Like the FTC doesn't really do anything about it.
Yeah. And then there's this whole Buy America thing that all presidents and administrations like tout as a, hey, we're going to help American domestic manufacturing and all this jazz. Turns out it doesn't always do that, and it raises costs and is a little bit of a two-edged sword. So the whole, what's made in America and how that's counted is like a PhD thesis or three is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So that's what we got.
There was a New York Times story about like this Buy American label, and it was so interesting. They referenced the first president, George Washington, that his inauguration, he chose homespun fabric that was made in America, not imported from England, to wear. And so this goes all the way back to then.
Setting precedent, everything he does. I heard that in Hamilton somewhere. Yeah. Anyway, send us more questions because we're out of questions. We need yours. You can send them to us, makemesmart@marketplace.org. But before we go, a super quick word about fundraising. We have told you about New Investors Week. If you've never donated to Marketplace or Make Me Smart before, this is your time. Our Investors Challenge Fund is going to hook you up, matching you dollar for dollar. We'd appreciate, obviously, anything you can do. You all are so generous to us, and we appreciate it. And we come to you every now and then, and we only do it because we need it. That's the fact. We only do it because we need it.
All right, that's it for us today. That is our last Wednesday show, actually, of 2021. But we'll be back tomorrow for Hollowed Out Shell Thursday. I'm going to set an intention that I don't want to be hollowed out tomorrow.
I think you have to go where the podcast leads you. I'm sorry. I don't think you get to set that intention. I think you have to go where the podcast leads you.
Even for the rest of the day, I have to be hollowed out?
Well, no. You just that 15 minutes. That's the only thing. You have to go where the podcast leads you. And if it's okay. And if it's not, you know, that's what it is. Anyway, reruns start next week. We're here Thursday, Friday this week. Reruns next week. Send us your questions, would you? MakeMeSmart@marketplace.org. Leave us a voicemail. Numbers 508-827-6278, 508-UB-SMART. Hook us up and tell us what you think or what's on your mind or what you want to know. And we'll tell you. Sorry, just waiting for the hook. Hold on. Okay, here we go. Today's episode of Make Me Smart was produced by Marissa Cabrera and Mark A. Green. Charlton Thorpe was engineering down at the studios in L.A. Grace Rubin is our intern.
Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music, and our senior producer is Bridget Bodner.
Off today, now though, because she's flying with two children under the age of four to go home to Michigan. Oof. Holy cow, Bridget. Yeah, I know. We were talking about it yesterday. Today was a rough day.
They're sweet, though. They're sweet children. But, flying.
Until you put them on an airplane for like 4 hours.
Then, the screaming begins.
The screaming. One can only hope they sleep or something. I don't know.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.